This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news and a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. I'm not supposed to criticize CBS News because they're on our station. But, geez, they're still going on Trump's tax returns. It's unbelievable how there's just no pretense of fairness or what people care about. Guy's been president for 3.5 years. You have plenty of data. To either want to vote for him again or not, but CBS still going on about the tax return story. There's nothing else going on in the world. It is, CBS has just become unhinged. They're getting like, I know they're on our station. I don't have anything to do with it, and I'm not supposed to criticize anything on our station, but oh my goodness. Let's see, Nicole, are we hooked up today?
We're hooked up.
How are we doing?
Hey! I think it's all right.
Okay, I'm liking it. So we have lots of examples. I wasn't going to lead Fast 15 with this, but the president had a really interesting moment at his presser yesterday. But the thing I wanted to check in with you about, so is Jay Inslee really bumping us off the air at 1:30 this afternoon?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, we're choosing to allow it, I suppose.
I've heard that from my sources in Olympia that Jay Inslee has now moved up his press conference to remove me from the airwaves for as long as possible in the afternoon.
Well, that's
my
very
sources.
Nice of them to give you that much power.
And I don't need the break. You know, I'm happy to do the entire show, but he wants to silence us by scheduling these 1:30 press conferences.
I kind of appreciate it bouncing from our show to Tom and Curly, so we all kind of get a break from them. But at the same time, if you're, you know, an elderly person at home with no Wi-Fi access, or maybe your phone doesn't alert you when the governor's going to talk, it's very confusing and very hard to find him. And Cuomo does the same time every day, so everybody knows when he's going to be on and where to find him. Trump was doing the same with the task force. And I think it's a bad move on Inslee's part to make it hard to find unless you have alerts.
I understand that. I think that his press conferences are such a joke. And again, would you say, I meant to do this during the top of the hour. Would you send our fine reporter, Hannah Scott, a message, please, Nicole?
I can do that, but I believe she's actually on vacation, so I'm not sure she's going to be joining the call today, but I'll.
Oh, you're kidding. Do we have any reporter who's going to be on the governor's
presser? I'll check
presser?
Into that.
Okay, if we do, I would love them, and I know that they always have their own stuff to pursue, but the story that we covered the entire 12 o'clock hour about this Port of Seattle cop who's getting fired for saying that he wanted to put the Constitution above directives that he found unconstitutional, I would love to hear the governor's comment on that, because the officer suggested that his firing goes all the way up to the very top at the state. So I'd love to know. I bet if somebody does ask him, I bet Inslee will play dumb and pretend he isn't familiar with the story. That's my prediction.
Well, I would hope that other, outlets in the area would be interested by that story as well. And somebody will ask I'll look into
it. Has anybody else covered the Port of Seattle cop? I haven't seen it in any other local media.
I'm not sure. I'll have to look again. I didn't see it earlier, but I'd have to look again.
Yeah. They all will now that we have, because they
exactly.
like playing follow the leader. Which we are. Okay, hey, speaking of CBS News, so here's the ridiculous moment at the President Trump press conference yesterday. So the reporter, the CBS White House correspondent, and I'm not sure the pronunciation of her first name, I don't want to goof it up, but she is going back and forth with the president, and she asks him a ridiculous question about, because the president has talked about how our testing in the United States has been better than any other country. Last week, you may recall, some other dimbulb reporter said, how come South Korea is testing more people than the United States per capita? And Dr. Birx was there, and she had the stats. She goes, no, actually, that's wrong. The United States is testing more per capita than South Korea or any other country. So it's a question that the reporters have brought up. And then yesterday, the CBS White House correspondent, who is Asian, she said, why are you making this a big competition and saying we're better than the other countries? Which is just a ridiculous, I'm just going to ask something to provoke the president so I can get some FaceTime. And listen to how this played out.
Why does that matter? Why is this a global competition to you if every day Americans are still losing their lives and we're still seeing more cases every day?
Well, they're losing their lives everywhere in the world. And maybe that's a question you should ask China. Don't ask me. Ask China that question, okay? When you ask them that question, you may get a very unusual answer. Yes, behind you, please.
What, sir, why are you saying that to me specifically?
I'm telling you.
Okay, and so now she's playing the race card. Why are you saying that to me specifically? And she pulls down her face mask to show the cameras her entire face, in case anybody didn't know that she was Chinese. And the reason he said ask China is because that's where this thing originated. But she's deciding to make this a, you're a racist because you told me, a Chinese American, to ask China. And then the rest of the press corps jumps in. This is how ridiculous this whole White House corps is.
I'm not saying it specifically to anybody. I'm saying it to anybody that would ask a nasty question.
That's
like that.
That's not a nasty question.
Please go ahead.
Why does it matter?
Okay. Anybody else?
So then he tries to go to another reporter, and it's the CNN woman, and she goes, "Oh no, I want to give my time back to the CBS woman."
Please go ahead in the back, please.
I have two questions.
No, it's okay.
But we'll, you pointed to me. I have two questions, Mr.
Next.
President.
Next, please.
Okay. And she you know, said, she's pointing to the CBS person, saying that, oh, I'm going to have you follow up for my questions. And Trump goes, well, I tried coming to you. You blew it. And he tries going to somebody else.
But you did. You called on me.
I did. And you didn't respond. And now I'm calling on
the
young lady in the back, please.
I just wanted to let my colleague finish. Okay. But can I ask you,
ladies and gentlemen, please? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I want to let my colleague finish with her made-up fake news racist accusations. Now, compare that to what Inslee's boring press conferences are like, where they can ask him, hey, how come you suspended competitive bidding for medical contracts in our state, Jay, and then you get a private email from your cousin's private email server asking to put your cousin's, the company he works with, to the front of the line to get $1 million state of Washington contracts. And Hannah Scott did ask Inslee about that last week, and he goes, yeah, that's baloney. And they just moved on, and the reporters are muted, and they can't ask any follow-up. And, you know, Trump has to put up with this garbage every single day, these, you know, made up accusations by a out of control press corps. And then you have Inslee, who doesn't get any tough questions. And if he responds with baloney, then they mute the reporters. So they can't ask a follow up. And speaking of fake news, next up in the Fastest 15. So last week, Jimmy Kimmel, And usually, you know, who cares? He's a far left wing late night comic who I used to love on the air. He was my favorite late night host for many years. But then he just went crazy. And so Jimmy Kimmel made up fake news last Thursday. And ordinarily it'd be, who cares? It's a late night comedy show. But the New York Times and NBC News picked up Jimmy Kimmel's fake news. And here's what he said on the air last week.
And since it was going so well, and also because he didn't realize he had a mic on, Magic Mike decided...
Oh, I should set it up a little bit. So there was a van delivering medical supplies to a clinic. Mike Pence was there, and Mike Pence was grabbing boxes out of the back of the van and putting them on a dolly, and that's what Kimmel's commenting on.
And since it was going so well, and also because he didn't realize he had a mic on, Magic Mike decided to keep it going. Listen in closely here.
Okay, and so it's hard to hear, but Pence unloads some boxes. It's just, you know, a photo op that every politician does. He unloads a couple boxes, then he walks back to the van to get more, and one of the guys goes, oh, those boxes are empty, sir. And Pence, smiling, he goes, oh, okay, unload the empty ones just for the cameras then? And everyone laughed, and then Pence shut the van doors. Well, Kimmel cuts it off right when Pence said, can I unload the empty ones just for the camera? And Kimmel just makes up that Pence was going to wanted to carry empty boxes for a photo op when it was just Pence goofing around with people who are working their butts off, and he made them laugh a little bit. And this is, you know, how Kimmel doped it.
Mike Pence pretending to carry empty boxes of PPEs into a hospital is the perfect metaphor for who he is and what he's doing. A big box of nothing, delivering another box of nothing.
Okay, like I said, who cares? He's a late night comic. But as I said, New York Times and NBC News picked up the Kimmel thing and presented that fake news as their reality. And so over the weekend, Kimmel got some very angry Trump-Pence supporters, I guess. Or maybe it's just people who hate fake news of any kind. But last night, I can't play the whole thing. I wish I could. But he just whined like a baby for about 5 minutes that people reacted negatively to his absolute fake news from last week.
Trouble started because at one point in the video, after awkwardly lugging a heavy box to the door, Mike Pence finds some empty boxes in the back of the van. Why there were empty boxes in the back of the van, I don't know, but he finds them.
And by the way, just that is a lie. The boxes didn't look heavy. Pence didn't awkwardly lug it. It was a very comfortable carry. I don't know what he's doing here. He's lost his mind, Kimmel.
He says, can I just carry the empty ones just for the camera? Which turns out he was joking. How anyone could tell when Mike Pence is joking, I don't know. I didn't know, but he was joking. I didn't know because I'd only watched part of the video. It turns out there were 29 minutes of this on C-SPAN that apparently indicate he was joking about carrying the empty boxes for the cameras, which again,
absolute lie, because all you had to do, Jimmy, was watch another 5 seconds, not 29 minutes, because immediately after Pence said, can I carry the empty ones just for the cameras? Everyone laughed, and then Pence himself shut the van doors. So you didn't need 29 minutes. You needed 5 more seconds, and you're lying when you act like you had no idea that it was a joke by him, that other media picked up his reality.
I didn't know because I don't have the mental endurance it requires to watch Mike Pence deliver boxes for 29 minutes on C-SPAN. But I should have watched the whole thing, I guess. Bottom line is, I was wrong. He was joking. I didn't know. I made a mistake. And when I found out I was wrong, I acknowledged it by taking the video down and tweeting an apology of sorts to the best of my ability. Apologizing to the Trump administration for spreading untruth is like apologizing to Barry Bonds for using steroids. It's hard.
Okay. And so, and he didn't apologize. It was, he just tweeted something out that was lame. But then he just went on and on last night because of all the death threats that he got this weekend over this.
But the outrage from the MAGA hats, the outpouring of venom was disgusting. Stupid, too, but mostly disgusting. Some of these lunatics have the audacity to use the word Christian in their bios, but that didn't stop them from wishing death on me, on my family, on my son. Some of them said they hope my son dies. They threatened my wife. There were hundreds of horrible, hateful, sometimes violent Twitter and Facebook posts because I showed what they kept calling a doctored video, which was not a doctored video, by the way. We didn't do anything to it. We didn't doctor the video. Doctors are the people Donald Trump doesn't listen to.
Okay, and it wasn't doctored in that they didn't embellish the video. It was just deceptively edited.
So then yesterday, it's Mother's Day. We're having a nice morning. I'm with the family, and I get a text that says, the president is tweeting about you. So he tweets, it took me a while to find it because he tweeted 125 times yesterday. He tweets, more fake news, this time from Jimmy Kimmel's Last Place show. He tweeted once every 7.5 minutes yesterday. That's impressive. He ignored a pandemic and his wife on Mother's Day. He really can do it all. So I replied to the tweet. I thought about it, and I just wrote, go make Melania brunch. Still no word on if he did. You think he ever made anyone anything? You think he, like, ever made Don Jr. a grilled cheese sandwich? So anyway, this is what the White House is working on and thinking about right now. This really is the dumbest time to be alive.
When they don't have an audience that can just mindlessly laugh and applaud at, you know, all you have to do is Orange Man Evil. When they don't have an audience, it reveals just how lame the attempts at comedy are. But anyway, it was really pathetic to watch his whole spiel last night and how much he was whining. All right, and finally in the Fastest 50.
Driving home this evening, I could have sworn we had it all worked out. You had this boy believing.
Canadian rock star Bryan Adams is very angry. He's not going to be able to do the tour that he had planned this summer, and so he went on a coronavirus rant on Instagram, and he said, tonight was supposed to be the beginning of a tenancy of gigs at Royal Albert Hall, but thanks to some bleeping, bat-eating, wet-market, animal-selling, virus-making, greedy B-words, the whole world is now on hold. And this affects your life personally, Nicole, I understand. You're set to go see him in Bon Jovi?
Yeah, I was really excited, actually. I really was excited, mostly to see Bon Jovi, but Brian was going to be there, too, and I thought that'd be a fun flashback, you know? And, yeah, I got notice the other day that they were canceled and I was being refunded. It's not even postponed. It's canceled.
Really? Yeah, where was it going to be?
Tacoma Dome.
Ah. One of the things about Bryan Adams, and I was reminded this last summer, Nicole and Jessamine McIntyre, the producer on 710, both of you joined my family. We went on that cruise over in Europe. And every night there was this, what was that woman's name? Was it Tatiana, the piano bar woman?
Yeah, you came up with that faster than I would have, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's amazing that I come up with anything.
You were pretty obsessed at the time, actually.
Yeah, she was fantastic, and but Bryan Adams has, and is it Cuts Like a Knife, the one that everyone knows?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean there are 12-year-old girls who were singing it along with her, and, you know, 60-year-old guys. And, you know, it's kind of like Don't Stop Believing. And it's just one of those songs that everybody, no matter what age they are, seems to know. So good for him. Sorry the tour is canceled. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Dory's Fastest 15.
It is not my fault. I didn't have any say in this. I don't want to be away from you for a few minutes, but Jay Inslee has a 1:30 press conference scheduled in Olympia. And even though he's boring, we're going to carry it for you live coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Breaking news, as the Dory Monson Show rolls on, Jay Inslee has just started his press briefing in Olympia. We take you there live.
Reopen our economy and our businesses while simultaneously protecting our health. And I'm excited about the progress our state has made to date and looking forward to this discussion. We're joined today by National Guard and Lieutenant Colonel Steve Hobbs, who you may know as a state senator as well, who will speak as on behalf of the National Guard. Department of Health Secretary John Weissman and Kittitas County Public Health Administrator Tristan Lamb. And I'd like to tell you about this initiative. It is robust, it is vigorous, and it is comprehensive, and it needs to be all three of those to succeed. This initiative will be a statewide extension of what local public health districts have historically done for other diseases, such as tuberculosis and hepatitis and the like. But it will be on a much grander scale, as it needs to be, given the extent of the COVID-19 virus. It will be the largest in our state's history, as it should be, and I'm very glad that we can implement this initiative now. And the reason is because if we do not succeed in this, what you might think is the second stage of our efforts, this virus could jump right back out and bite us. We've had some early success in our state, as you know, because of the vigorous effort of Washingtonians to socially distance, which has been very frustrating and difficult for us. But it has given us early success. It has given us the opportunity to continue this for some more time as we then transition into the contact tracing, testing, and isolation initiative that we are implementing. So this initiative will represent a transition from one strategy to another. Our early days, we used social distancing. It's been frustrating, but it has been significantly effective. Now, as we attempt to transition to open back up our economy, we're simultaneously moving to this second initiative of testing, contact tracing, and isolation of people who, in fact, are infected. We think of this as a smart weapon against this this virus. It's smart because it's located just to the folks and targeted for the folks who are positive. And if it's successful, it will allow us to reopen our economy. But this is something we have to be dedicated to, and today I want to share with you our dedication to that effort. Now, as we know at the moment, there are no treatments to stop the spread of this virus, but this is the smart weapon that is available to us. And I want to say, in some sense, this next stage, the testing, contact, tracing, and isolation stage of this effort, actually will be more difficult in a sense, and its success will depend on both the state and local public health officials, and most importantly, individuals and families who will need to be committed to this effort to help their community. If I can, let me just show you what this basically will look like. We think of the contact tracing initiative as an effort to box in the virus. We want to surround it where it can't get out of that fence and infect more people. It starts with the very first part of this is quarantining upon first symptoms. We need people to isolate themselves as soon as we get symptoms, including their household, even before test results come back.
because we have found that people can be very infectious very early in the disease. The second step is to test widely, and we are expanding our testing capability in the state of Washington so that we can test early and quickly and get those results to people as fast as possible. The third step is to isolate quickly. Certainly for people who are positive will need to remain isolated and their families as well for 14 days. The fourth is to identify the contacts, and this is where we'll talk in some detail about our state efforts to be able to notify people who have had contact with a person soon infected so that they can protect themselves, their families, and the community at large. And the fifth, of course, is to quarantine those people who've had contact who may be at risk even before that they have had a positive test. So that in general is the corral we want to put around this virus. And this is going to be a partnership between our local health districts, which know the ground and know their communities, and the state of Washington Department of Health to bring both those levels of government to bear on this problem. So if I can start with the really first stage in this initiative, and that is isolation and quarantine. Now, this is maybe one of the most important things, and that is that we know that to prevent this virus from spreading, it is extremely important for people to isolate themselves at the very first sign of symptoms of COVID-19, even before they have tested. The same is true for their household. And the reason is it may take a day to make the decision to get tested. It may take a day or two to get tested and get the results back as we build our testing protocol. And in those intervening days, people can infect any number of people going about what would be their normal activities. And that is a risk. That's those critical hours that we have to stop this virus in its tracks. This is going to take a lot of commitment by individuals in Washington, but we have already shown the knowledge of understanding the science of this virus, and I'm hoping people will heed this request. So it is a major challenge, but it is critical. The second issue is that we will have testing and our contact tracing. Let's see. So we will then have people get their tests. And when they have a test, they will be reached by phone for the results. And at that time, they will be asked some questions about people with whom they've had contact who might have been infected by this virus. The contact tracer, and I'll talk about who those people are, they're very highly trained people, they will reach out to the other people to let them know that they have been exposed to a person in conditions that could result in their infection. And that's important because those people will need to isolate themselves and their families as well. Our plan, we hope to achieve the ability to contact people within 24 hours of a positive test coming back from the first individual and talking to their close contacts within 48 hours. So this has to be very quick to be effective, and it's one of the reasons we've properly resourced what's necessary to make this initiative work. That's very important to understand that this information will remain private. The information collected is only used by public health, and it is confidential. It will not be shared. Contacts will not be told the name of the person who may have been exposed, have exposed themselves to COVID-19. These professional interviewers will ask about symptoms and recent exposure and demographic questions such as age, address, and gender and ethnicity. But this will remain private, and the people who were contacted will not know who the person was who provided their name. Now, to show how this will work, we wanted to show you who will be the contact tracers. This is a labor-intensive endeavor, and we want to make sure that we have enough resources to get this job done. It's a very heavy lift for the people working on this effort, and that's why we're building up the contact tracing team, which by the end of this week will have 1,371 people who are fully trained when that is necessary to get this job done. And this will include, to date, 351 members of the Washington National Guard, 390 members of the Department of Licensing who have been trained, the State Department of Licensing, and a combination of 630 state and local health department professionals who today are working for the local health departments or the state health department. These people are fully trained, and that's really important, because we want to make sure that these folks respect the rights of privacy of the people involved and that they have a good sense about how to deal with the public who are sometimes in very anxious about their results and the like. And we feel good about the training that has been provided to them. So the people who do this work are very carefully screened, and they sign strict confidentiality agreements. Now, some of the things they will not ask, about immigration status or a social security number or financial information or marital status. And I am looking forward to their work because it is the thing that gives us an opportunity to have confidence to move forward to reopen our economy as we continue to build this effort. So with that, I'd like to ask Lieutenant Colonel Steve Hobbs to address this issue. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Governor. You know, as from the very beginning, you've utilized the National Guard in dealing with this pandemic. And many of you should know that we live in your community. We are doctors, teachers, and construction workers, which is why we are so invested in reversing the spread of the coronavirus. That's why we are so pleased to support the Department of Health and its efforts to push the voluntary COVID-19 mapping program, the mission that we are currently doing. The Department of Health is a lead agency. We are using their equipment, and we are staying in their facilities. And privacy is the utmost importance, which is why all data received and inputted is from the Department of Health's secure database. And as the governor said, all this is voluntary. We're only contacting people that have already agreed to be contacted, and the individual can end the phone call at any time. The members of your National Guard are highly trained in this effort, which is why yesterday when we contacted people who need to be contacted in this mission, we have received overwhelming response, positive response from these individuals. Additionally, we were able to help Washingtonians who were in need. There was one case when one person needed interpreted services, and another elderly person needed access to food. With coordination with the Department of Health, we were able to connect these people with the services and the agencies and nonprofits to get them the help that they need. Not only does this reverse and slow down the spread of the coronavirus, but also this helps people who are in great need. The Washington National Guard is ready to serve. This is a unique mission for us, but it's not unique when we help our community and our state. So we'll be there as long as the governor needs us.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. I've seen the guard doing
yeoman duty already at our food banks, packing food for people. It's been really inspiring. Those folks never get tired, at least they never show it, so please thank them on our behalf. And it's just great to have people who understand the discipline and following orders. It's very important in this, so please thank them on our behalf. We have John Weissman. John Weissman, our Secretary of Health.
Great. Thanks, Governor, and we're incredibly appreciative of the National Guard and
Department of Licensing for their willingness to serve in this capacity. This really does take all of us, and the partnerships to make this are incredibly important. And that partnership really, I want to remind people, starts with each and every one of us. It starts in that if we're feeling ill, it's incredibly important that we stay home and not share our germs. And if we've got symptoms similar to that of COVID, that being the cough, fever, difficulty breathing, and recently have added more symptoms like chills, muscle pain, headaches, sore throat, or loss of taste or smell recently, those are all things that might signal symptoms of COVID-19. And we really want you to, first of all, stay home, get tested if you have any of these symptoms, so that you can find out if you're infected with COVID-19 or not, and get the appropriate care that you need. So it really starts with each and every one of us taking that responsibility very seriously. And I know folks want to open up the economy, and central to that is really that each one of us takes the responsibility to assure that we are monitoring our health, and doing what is right, not only for us, but for the community. And then this is still important that we do the physical distancing, given that we have this virus around. And so we can't let up on that either in our good hygiene. This effort around contact tracing is incredibly important to our success in moving forward. It's that partnership with each and every one of you that makes that successful, so that we can assist you in being able to isolate yourself and help you be successful in that effort, along with taking care of your household members and those close contacts that you have come in contact with. So that's the effort of our local health department folks and the National Guard and the Department of Licensing, who are here to assist you in being successful, here to assist you in helping us get the economy back up and running, and help us all stay as safe as we can. So again, it's really important, if you've got symptoms, stay home, get tested, and then engage with public health in this important work. We can help you be successful, and you can help us be successful. So we're looking forward to your cooperation. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thanks.
You're listening live to a press briefing down in Olympia, the next step in the fight against coronavirus contact tracing. We take you back to Olympia. Live coverage continues here on the Dory Monson Show.
Thank you, Governor Inslee. You know, state and local partnership has never been more crucial. Here in Kittitas County, we're dealing with an outbreak after weeks with no cases. In fact, we've applied for a variance because we're a small county that had, up until last Thursday, only recovered cases. Now that application is on pause, and we're operationalizing the plan that we put into place to handle a situation just like this. Now that we're executing this plan, the need for a standardized and uniformed approach to case and contact investigation is more obvious than ever. Case and contact investigation is truly the heart of public health. It's learning how a disease got here and learning where it's going to go and trying to stop before it spreads there. That kind of work, interviewing our patients, our residents, our neighbors sometimes, and making sure that they have everything they need, takes a lot of time. And in a situation like a COVID-19 outbreak, time is of the essence. Time will make or break our chance of success for tackling this virus. So right now in our emergency operations center, we're using paper. Our staff and our volunteers have to write down all of the information they get from our interviews, keep it secure, compile it all on paper. We continue to get the support from the state, helping us take that paper and get it into a database. We need ways to get it in there sooner, to be entering that information as we're gathering it, and for that information to make connections across jurisdictions, because this disease isn't stopping at our county's border. More importantly, we need the bodies to do that work. We need people. We need them now, because case and contact investigation needs to be done in real time for it to be effective. Again, our response plan in Kittitas County was ready, and I'll add, really good. Now that we're in the midst of an outbreak, our number one limiting factor is truly time. The longer it takes for us to do this work, the longer COVID-19 is in our communities. So thank you, Governor Inslee and all, for this opportunity to speak on behalf of my local health jurisdiction.
Thanks, Tristan. We know that with your outbreak, you're working really hard, and I'm glad we're going to have the state to provide you resources. We'll look forward to your call about how to really be an effective partnership right away. So I hope you're going to make sure you let us know how we can help Kittitas. I heard somebody the other day on some show, some physician, say the most important sort of biological fact in this case is that this virus doesn't have any legs. It can't travel without us. And so that if we limit our movement and our exposure, we cut it right off. And that this is what this is about. And I'm glad we're going to have a uniform reporting system so that the state can be coordinated. I'm glad that we are working in combination with the University of Washington for an app that could be of assistance to people to find out if they have been in the proximity of people who are infected. That app could use some hardware, essentially, and software from Apple and Google. And this is a very promising technology that we are working with the UW on. We're going to make sure that if it is implemented, there's going to be the strictest privacy requirements because, of course, that's so important in this endeavor. So that is another allied effort that we're now involved in as part of this initiative. I wanted to talk just a little bit more about the isolation for families involved in this. If we could put up the isolation and quarantine graph just for a moment. So critical to the success of this endeavor, obviously finding people who are infected is important, but making sure that they care for themselves and that they do not infect other people is central to this. And that's the isolation and quarantine of this three-legged stool of testing, contact, tracing, and isolation. And there's 4 points to this I just want to share with people because it's so central to our success. Number one, we really need people to quarantine immediately upon their first symptoms and stay quarantined until you get a negative test result. And it's just because those first few days are critical. We're finding so many people who've been infected by people who are asymptomatic even. So if you have someone who has symptoms and their spouse then goes out and infects someone before you get a positive test, we've got another family that's in a very difficult situation. So this is something we have to depend upon the sense of commitment and compassion that Washingtonians have to make this work. The second point is that if people do test positive, they will need to isolate for 14 days. And that includes people in their household. So that means the household, the family, will need to isolate with them. And if a person cannot do that, there will be other isolation facilities for them away from their household. But we assume that the vast majority of people would rather spend those 14 days at home. And if they do so, we're going to have to make sure that the household also isolates with them, given the high transmission rate from one person to each household. A third, during that period of time, of course, a contact tracer will call and have a discussion about the other people that they've had a contact with to help those families. Fourth, and this is important, while that family or household is isolating, they will have support. They'll get a call or a text every day from someone to see how they're doing, see how their isolation is going, see if there's needs that they might have medically or even for food support and the like, to try to work with them to make sure that they're as comfortable as possible during that 14-day period. And we want to be as reassuring to these families as possible. I'm glad we are making progress in our state. I'm glad that we now have eight counties that we have allowed to move to phase two: Wakayakum, Skamania, Stevens, Columbia, Garfield, Lincoln, Ferry, and Pondere counties. Other counties with roughly 75,000 people or no new cases will also become eligible for the early transition to phase two in just the upcoming days, and we will work forward from there. Again, I just want to thank people for what they've been doing to date in our state and what they're going to do as we move to the next stage of this challenge. I know this is very hard on people, the stresses we have of not seeing our mothers on Mother's Day. We had an electronic conversation with our 102-year-old mother-in-law, and that was great. But we want to get back to the days when we're hugging each other. And this contact tracing, testing, and isolation initiative will make that sooner rather than later. So I hope people will remain committed to it, as we already have shown our grit and our diligence and our sense of commonality as we work together on this challenge. And again, I just want to say, if anyone's having some challenges they'd like some help with, hope people can reach out to mental health professionals or if they're having domestic violence issues at coronavirus.wa.gov, coronavirus.wa.gov. We want to take care of all everybody in the state. So with that, happy to stand for questions.
You're listening to a live press conference in Olympia. This is KIRO FM, Tacoma, Seattle. Live coverage on the Dory Monson Show continues from Olympia.
800 that are trained as of this week. And then as it relates to these investigations, Switzerland and New Orleans initially sought to require restaurants to keep names and phone numbers of patrons for contact tracing purposes, but reversed course due to privacy concerns. Why did you make that a requirement rather than voluntary under the reopening guidelines for restaurants?
So yes, thank you for the question about hiring. We do intend to hire additional people and have volunteers to increase to at least some degree our capability over the next several weeks. We want to do that because we'd like to have a little bit bigger roster of folks in the event that we saw a spike in cases. We also would like to, over time, release some of the members of the National Guard back to their civilian duties. These are very accomplished people. So we will be involved in that in the next several weeks. And if people are interested, please let us know because it's an important endeavor. The names issue is that we're trying to work with the industries to see what will make sense. This contact tracing, obviously, if you have somebody who's become sick and they were sitting right next to a person at a restaurant, to be able to identify that person could be very valuable for their health to try to save their life. And so we put that in place. We're talking to the Restaurant Association. They think this may be tenable. We're continuing to refine this over time. And one way or another, we got to make sure we take care of people's health.
Question comes from David with the Seattle Times.
Yeah, hi, Governor. Is it all starting right now, or when will it start? And the number of cases we're still seeing each day, several hundred cases each day. Do you have enough contact tracers right now to trace every one of the cases being reported?
Yes, we believe that we do, and that's operative now. If local health departments call for these resources, they can be deployed. I'm glad that we started this training some time ago to make sure it was available as we begin this transition, and I'm glad that that we have that training that's already taken place. So, yes, it is operative. Now, if we have spikes in this, it's possible that we would have to significantly increase our capability, but we have the framework to do that because we're able to do the training on a very expedited basis. We have a good protocol on how to do that. It's been very successful. And the people we've trained to date, they're ready to go. And so all we have to do is put them in the game if we get requests from the local health departments. They will make the request to begin with so that we can deploy these people out to the counties, to the places where they are most successful, or most needed, excuse me.
Next question comes from Essex with Cairo.
Yes, Governor, I have a question for you and a question for Secretary Wiseman. For you, we see so many reports of businesses violating your orders to stay shut down, and so little enforcement we are seeing. So why should any businesses comply? And for Secretary Wiseman, would you update us on tests? Supposedly the federal government was going to send us hundreds of thousands of swabs. Have they arrived? Does the state have all the test kits it needs to implement the tracing and testing plan?
John, you want to go ahead?
Yes, thanks for that question. So as you know, the federal government has indicated they will supply us with about 580,000 swabs and viral transport media in the month of May and again in June. I think we received about 34,000 last week, and we're hopefully expecting more in any time now. That's what we've been told. That is a key component to our ability to move forward and to open the economy so that people who are showing symptoms can immediately go get tests. And those folks who have been in close contact with them, whether they have symptoms or not, can also get a test. We definitely want to do a lot more testing than we're doing right now. We have the capacity to do it in terms of our labs. I will say that we've increased testing over the last couple of weeks by 1,000 or so a day, which is a start moving in the direction that we want to go. But we do have more to go, and we're really looking forward and hopeful to those supplies coming from the federal government, in addition to the supplies that we've been trying to procure on our own.
Yeah, I just want to note that this is we're glad we've got some success this week, but we are going to have to remain very diligent to maintain and increase these supplies in the upcoming months. And the reason is that as we reopen the economy, the need for this testing capability will actually grow over time, so we can test, you know, large numbers of people in large businesses that might end up having an infection. So this is going to grow over time, and we remain committed to that. We're looking for every possible means. Yesterday I found, we think, 30,000 test kits in Vancouver from a company, Molecular Labs, that also we think can help us in our analytical capability. So this is something we're committed to every single day. As far as compliance with the order, actually there has been amazingly high compliance with this order. The vast, vast, vast majority of Washingtonians are complying with this order. And they are doing so because they understand the science of this, of how deadly this disease is, and they want to be responsible Washingtonians. So there's two reasons this has been, by and large, successful. Number one, Washingtonians want to be responsible to their family's health and to their neighbor's health. And that's what this is all about. And the vast majority of business people that I know, they want to be responsible citizens. They want to take care of their neighbors' lives. They don't want to be seen as violating something we're all depending on. And yes, there's a couple folks that haven't got the memo yet, but that's an aberration. That's not the Washington spirit, and that's not the Washington way, and that's not what Washington's doing right now. So we understand how the press works and what ends up on the news. But the news I see is Washingtonians are doing what they should, which is protecting themselves and their families and their neighborhoods. Now, there's a second reason as well. For people who finally won't comply, they're going to have to comply eventually. And if they don't, there are sanctions they will face, either in civil court or in criminal court. I spoke to the Attorney General about this today. We'll have more to say about this in the days to come.
Next question comes from Jim with the Spokesman Interview.
Governor, yesterday the Spokane Regional Health District Board and Dr. Bob Lutz, the health officer, said they think Spokane is, is ready to move to phase two of reopening the local economy. And this morning, the county commissioners voted to pursue that. When might you have a decision about the criteria for variances for larger counties like Spokane and a decision on when the county qualifies?
Well, what I would say is it's possible that we will have that before the end of this order. This order goes through May 31st. There's a strong possibility that in the next couple of weeks we'll take another review to see if larger counties could fit into it and what those criteria would be. We are thinking about that. I can't give you an exact date. I appreciate Spokane's proposal. We're going to look at it. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I particularly will talk to the health folks in Spokane as well. So we'll make that decision as soon as we can evaluate it.
Next question comes from Keith with Como.
Governor, where do we stand on the phases? Are we ready to start phase two June 1st, as Secretary Wiesman has said? And doctors in the hospitals and dentists, are they going to be fully ready to go 1 week from today?
Well, June 1st is a hopeful date, but it is very important to understand it is not fixed in stone. The virus will determine whether we can start on June 1, and our ability to be successful in our social distancing and our contact tracing will determine whether we can take that next step in June 1st. And it's important to make that decision based on the extent and threat of the virus. We hope that that will be the case. The more that everybody in the state of Washington does to socially distance, to make decisions in their personal life, not to get into congregations of 10 people at a party, even on a sunny day, the more likely it'll be. But we cannot guarantee that. And I look forward to that. We all want it as soon as humanly possible, because I understand the pain and the anxiety. Everyone feels it. I'm glad we've made some early steps to open up construction and golf and fishing and hunting and elective surgery. We hope the dentists cannot be far behind. By the way, the dentists have been very, very responsible. I want to thank them. Their professional organization early in this made a decision to essentially suspend some of their regular activities so that they could save the PPE that is necessary for critical care in hospitals. I want to laud them for that. So we're going to hope to get them back as soon as we can.
Question comes from Emery with the Columbia Basin Herald.
Hi. If restaurants are going to be required to keep a list of customers coming in as they move into phase two, will there be a requirement for customers coming into a restaurant to prove their identity, such as providing photo ID? And to follow up on that, would there be penalties if somebody was to give false information?
Well, we're talking to the restaurant owners about the things that might make sense to them. And so we'll have more to say about this, to have some workable thing. Look, here's the deal. We want to be able to open restaurants. People are anxious for that. And we want to do some common sense things so that if someone does have an infection in a restaurant, we will be able to save other patrons' lives. We ought to be able to do both. And this is something that we have to make sure that we build protocols around, a privacy, so that any of this information can only be used for this purpose, can be expunged after 14 days, so that this is only a minor inconvenience. No one's looking to make this a federal crime. We're trying to save some lives here. And I think that we're going to find ways to work together to do both, have a good linguine, and make sure nobody dies. That ought to be a good night's dinner.
Next question comes from Natalie with King 5.
Governor, just how realistic is this with contact tracing? We know the state's already having trouble dealing with unemployment claims. How can you expect to start reaching out to people who may have been exposed? And then a second question for you, what, if any, is the current plan to allow drive-ins to open?
I can't give you a specific answer off the top of my head on drive-ins, so I'll try to get back to you on that, on the specific on drive-in theaters. Your question about how we can do this, the reason we can do the contact tracing is twofold. Number one, we've stood up an army, so to speak, or a fire brigade. I think of this as a COVID brigade. It's a brigade. It's kind of like a fire brigade. When you have a fire in your house, you call the fire department. They come, they put out the fire. We want to do the same thing for COVID. And we now have 1,391 people who, on just a couple days' notice, can be available to do what's necessary to do this contact tracing. This is more than adequate for the existing needs, but we want to continue to build that at least a bit so that we can have that available in case a spike occurs. And like I say, we've actually provided the training, including folks in the Department of Licensing. So I'm confident that we will have the resources to get this job done. But also, it's because we will, I think, have the assistance and agreement of Washingtonians, because I think they know how important this is. And like I said, the vast majority of Washingtonians have wanted to be a team member to get this job done. By the way, the National Guard, their function here is public health. They are not a law enforcement organization. So people should realize the Guard will not have any law enforcement obligations associated with this. They simply will be talking to people and helping them prevent others from getting sick.
Time for a few more questions. Next question comes from Mayor with KXLY.
Hi, Governor. When it comes to contact tracing, how are you guys going to handle people or families who want to refuse a test or to isolate if they want to leave their home to get groceries? I know you said they can't do that. How will you make sure they don't?
Well, that's why I referred to the family support personnel. We will have attached to the families a family support person who will check in with them to see what they need on a daily basis, see how they're doing, see how they're faring, and help them. If they can't get a friend to do their grocery shopping, we will help get them groceries in some fashion. If they need pharmaceuticals to be picked up, we can help make sure that they get their pharmaceuticals. So that's why we want to provide them family support. Now, obviously, it'd be very nice if family and neighbors pitch in a little bit, too. And we think people will do that. We're still in the West. There still is an attitude of taking care of our neighbors and our families, and we think that's going to be important. But for those who still don't have that kind of support, we're going to be there on a daily basis for them. Now, that's going to help encourage them to maintain their isolation, too. And that's important, have a little moral support. As far as refusal, it just shouldn't come to that, and it really hasn't. We've had really good success when we've asked people to isolate. They've done so in the real high percentages. So we're happy about that, and we believe that that will continue.
Two more questions?
Next question comes from Paul with Bloomberg.
Governor, if you implement the phase two requirements for restaurants in terms of customer data collection for contact tracing, do you have the power to restrict how restaurants use that data for other reasons that could be like advertising or even selling the data?
Yes, and as I said, we're working with the industry to develop protocols to make it very clear that restaurants could not use this data for anything, period, except sharing information if there's a contact tracing review. And that would be legally enforceable. We would make sure that people know the seriousness of that issue. We would monitor it. We would audit it. It's very important for us to maintain privacy in this entire endeavor. It's one of the reasons I'm glad we have the Guard, who are very disciplined and follow orders. I'm glad we have Department of Licensing people and the Department of Health. And I would point out that this is something I think we should have a lot of confidence in because we've been doing it for decades without violations of privacy. So our local departments of health have been doing exactly this kind of work for decades for people who have any number of diseases. And to my knowledge, we have not had any privacy issues associated with that. They've been very disciplined maintaining privacy. We would intend to protect that legally.
Final question comes from Jerry with the Everett Herald.
Governor, two questions, one on the budget, one on contact tracing. Just on the budget, have you received any information on revenue for April yet? And then on the contact tracing, and you were talking about 750 National Guard members at some point. Will it get to that level? And finally, the local health district said there's been a threshold until now that they needed to have at least 50 new cases in a single day to access Department of Health contact tracers. Is there a threshold, or can they just call right now and say, we need 40?
The line is open, and there's no threshold. So we want to help as much as we possibly can. As far as the Guard number, we wanted to tell you what we've trained to date. We can train up more members as demand increases, and that's a several-day process, but it's been very, very effective. So this is the number we thought gave us high confidence that we could do the necessary tracing with the number of infections we have today. If that goes up, we can expand this quite quickly. The budget issue, as you know, our preliminary numbers is that we'll be at just under $7 billion deficit for the next 3 years, and this can be a real challenge for us.
Final words before we wrap up?
Again, just want to thank people for what you're doing. I just continue to see people who are pitching in so many different ways. And I would just finish my comments by saying that this is a moment of high challenge that really calls for us to be more dedicated than we've ever been to this. And I think that's actually one of the greatest challenges. You know, it's sometimes you get a little tired in the third quarter or the beginning of the fourth quarter. But we can't do that right now because this is the moment where we can actually get to a successful reopening of our economy. We've started down that road. But we have to finish that job if we won't have to go back to reducing our economic output. So stick to it. We're doing good things in our state. We're proud of what we're doing. And please wash your hands. Thank you.